U.S. weekly jobless claims jump to a three-month high amid new shutdowns due to a surging coronavirus pandemic. The UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson says there is a strong possibility Britain will fail to broker a trade deal with the European Union as talks remain deadlocked with the bloc. And Palestinian groups strongly condemn a decision by Morocco to normalize relations with Israel. Welcome everyone to the World News. Now, newly released government data shows nearly 1.4 million Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week, numbers far higher than economists had expected, and is the biggest since the end of March during the early days of the coronavirus pandemic. 19 million workers are now getting some form of government assistance, but those benefits could stop by the end of the year. Congress has been deadlocked for months now over passing a spending bill, which includes a new federal relief package to help families and businesses hit hard by the pandemic. Hundreds of Hondurans have formed a caravan to seek asylum in the U.S. after losing their homes to a couple hurricanes.
We are heading to the United States because we have lost everything. On behalf of all migrants, we ask the new president of the United States to help us. We can't live here anymore. We were going to wake up at the bus terminal, but we had to leave. We would be resting right now, and we had to go. Just imagine how risky it is to walk at night.
Migrants from the northern city of San Pedro Sula went on foot for the Guatemalan border after calls went out on social media to organize a caravan to the U.S. And Guatemala's migration authorities warned approaching migrants what they'll need that they will need at least the negative results of the coronavirus and their passports to enter the country. Last month, hurricanes Eta and Iota destroyed infrastructure, homes, and crops and left some 100 people dead in Honduras. Caravan aims to reach the U.S. despite the American government's enforcing a zero-tolerance policy under President Donald Trump. The European Union has unveiled a no-deal Brexit contingency plan amid growing fears that the bloc in Britain may fail to agree on a trade deal by the year's end. European Commission President published the proposed measures in a statement on Twitter. The plans include the continuation of road and air travel between the EU and the UK for 6 months in case of a no-deal Brexit. The bloc has also proposed the possibility of reciprocal fishing access to each other's waters for a year or until an accord is reached. Meanwhile, Irish Foreign Minister said there's still a very wide gap between the EU and Britain over a trade deal. Simon Coveney urged the British authorities to reframe the arguments that they've been making to themselves on sovereignty.
Government leaders meeting in Brussels have adopted proposals aimed at trying to avert chaos at EU-UK borders in the event that Britain abruptly exits the bloc's rules and regulations at the end of this month when the Brexit transition period ends on the 31st of December. This as floundering trade talks between both sides continue.
No one understates the challenges that lie ahead, but it's important for the citizens of Europe that we do everything we possibly can to get agreement here.
France has made it clear it will veto any EU-UK trade agreement that does not safeguard the livelihoods of those involved in the French fishing industry. The big sticking point for Germany is ensuring that British firms do not have unfair advantage over EU firms, for example, via state subsidies. Hardline Brexiteers do not want to see a deal as they are worried this would align the UK too closely to the EU. Equally, there are many people in the European Union who adjudge London to be extremely arrogant. This cohort does not want to see a deal as they'd rather look on as Britain faces the full consequences of Brexit. Those consequences might include very restricted travel to the EU from the UK from January the 1st due to the 27-nation bloc's COVID-19 rules with respect to non-members. British citizens living in the EU would likely face all sorts of bureaucracy. Then, of course, there are warnings of dire economic consequences for the UK and possibly Scottish independence. We are told the key to securing a EU-UK future relationship agreement to avoid chaos in January is fairness.
This fine balance of fairness has not been achieved so far. Our negotiators are still working, and we will take a decision on Sunday.
Even in the absence of a trade deal with the UK, EU leaders know they already face many economic challenges.
We still haven't fully resolved the problems of very high public debt, private debt still very high, banking sector problems still very present, price adjustments still ongoing.
The prospects aren't looking good. As EU leaders continued their meeting in the Belgian capital, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson stated there is a, quote, strong possibility a trade deal will not be reached. Jerome Hughes, outside the European Council, Brussels.
Morocco has become now the fourth Muslim country to normalize ties with Israel under a U.S. brokered agreement. The decision, however, has been met with strong condemnation, and we discussed this matter earlier in our news review program. Morocco's decision to normalize ties with Israel has been met with fierce condemnation by Islamic groups and factions. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas called the move a political sin, which emboldens the Israeli regime in its crimes against Palestinians. Islamic Jihad movements also condemned the decision as a betrayal to the Islamic and Arab world. Yemen's Ansarullah movement also noted there isn't any justification for Arab states to establish ties with Israel. Reactions follow U.S. President Donald Trump's announcement that Morocco has become the fourth Arab country to normalize its ties with the regime after Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Sudan as of late. In return, Trump said that Washington recognized Morocco's sovereignty over the entire Western Sahara. And now joining us for this news review is Ali Al-Faraj, political activist, joining us from London, and Paul LaRudy from the Free Palestine Movement joining us from Berkeley, California. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start in London and head out west from there. Mr. Ali Al-Faraj, your initial thoughts on this, please.
Yeah, obviously there have been some ties between the Zionist regime and the Moroccan regime before. However, the relationships were undercover, basically. The Zionist regime has expansions, and Mossad has been working in several Arab countries before. Obviously now, the announcement of the relationship, normalization of the relationship, is not helping any peace process in Middle East, because the Zionist regime has been occupying more and more Palestinian lands and keeping Gaza Strip under siege, obviously violating all sorts of human rights. It's an apartheid regime, and people who stand by such regime, like they stand by the regime in South Africa before, they were definitely at the wrong side of humanity and is not supporting any sort of ethical movement or support for Palestinian rights. If there were no ties before, and the Zionist regime didn't admit to the Palestinian rights, including the right for a Palestinian state, how would they do that now if the relationships are being normalized? The Palestinians themselves see this as a stab at the back, and is not supporting the peace process, is not supporting the end of occupation, is not supporting other than starting new wars. The Zionist regime is known to start a war against its neighboring countries, and has also participated in the war against the Yemeni people. And these allies, especially the UAE, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and Egypt as well, they were participating in a war against the innocent Yemeni civilians. And we are now living the worst humanitarian crisis in Yemen in this century as a result of this coalition. Any normalization of relationship with the Zionist regime is not in support of any peace process, is not in support of any benefit for any of these countries. There have been normal ties between Egypt, Jordan, and the Zionist regime for nearly four decades, and the people of Egypt and Jordan haven't benefited at all from such relationship. We okay. know this regime.
Okay, Ali, let me come back to you. I'm asking you more than one question, so if you could, let me welcome Mr. Paul LaRue to the program. Hello, Paul. And to Ali's point, he says this does exactly the opposite with the Trump administration and Benjamin Netanyahu called this a historic opportunity for peace, and it's going to lead to more peace in the Middle East. But people like Ali and like yourself and possibly like many other critics of these normalization deals feel that it's doing exactly the opposite, both to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and to the greater geopolitical ramifications it has on the tensions in the Middle East.
Well, not only is it doing the opposite, but that's the intention. Israel doesn't want peace. Israel wants territory, power, and it wants genocide. It wants to eliminate Palestinians, preferably 100%. If not by killing them, then by making them forget that they're Palestinian. This is the objective. But they want them to disappear from Palestine. And don't worry, they're doing the same thing they're not limited to Palestine. They're doing the same thing to Syrians in the Golan Heights, and they will do the same in Lebanon. In fact, they have done the same in Lebanon. This is all part of the system. But it's very clear that thanks to that very good friend of Israel, Donald Trump, that Israeli occupied territory is growing daily. My goodness, they have territories at the opposite end of the Mediterranean. They have territories on the Gulf of Oman and the Persian Gulf. They're creating occupied territory everywhere you look. So this is there are no principles in foreign affairs. There are no principles involved between the relations between Israel, the United States, the Arab countries, and so forth. It's not based on principles. It's based on power and money. So whoever's got the power and the money, they make things like this happen.
Time has gotten the better of us. I want to thank you both for showing up and joining us on the program here. Ali Al-Faraj joining us from London there, and Mr. Paul LaRue joining us out of Berkeley, California. The U.S. Senate has approved a massive arms sales to the United Arab Emirates. Legislation has been passed despite Abu Dhabi's role in the years-long war on Yemen and its controversial military adventurism in the region. Here's a report.
The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump is given the go-ahead to sell billions of dollars worth of arms to the UAE. On Wednesday, the Republican-led U.S. Senate approved the deal proposed by the government. The contract, reportedly worth some $23 billion, includes the sales of the U.S.'s most advanced F-35 fighter jets and Reaper drones. Senators voted almost along party lines on two resolutions. All but two Democrats voted to block the deal, while one Republican broke ranks to vote against the sale. Trump had issued a formal threat to veto congressional efforts to block the weapons transfer. Those in favor of the deal described the UAE as an important U.S. partner in West Asia. Detractors, on the other hand, argued the UAE should not be armed with advanced weapons given its involvement in the war on Yemen. They also warned that such a move would ignite an arms race in the region. A couple of months ago, in a controversial move, the UAE normalized its relations with Israel. The country trampled upon years of at least verbal commitment to the Palestinian cause by recognizing Israel. It also distanced itself from the majority of the Arab countries that have no diplomatic relations with Israel over the regime's occupation of Palestinian lands. The UAE's recognition of Israel was said to be a precondition for its purchase of advanced weaponry from the United States.
Therefore, F-35 jets and Reaper drones can be considered the payoff for turning their back to Palestinians. The United Arab Emirates, which is ruled by monarchs, has a bleak human rights record. The country is a staunch Saudi ally, the two of which have been leading a devastating war on Yemen since March 2015. The war has killed thousands of innocent Yemenis, including women and children, and has caused what the UN describes as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The UAE also openly supported anti-government militants in Syria, exacerbating the suffering of the Syrian people by fueling the bloodshed in the Arab country. It has also been actively engaged in a brutal suppression of a popular pro-democracy movement in neighboring Bahrain. Abu Dhabi is now eyeing to seize control of southern Yemen, including a strategic island there, using its proxies.
Iranian-based Al-Mustafa International University has condemned the U.S. for imposing sanctions against the institution. In a statement, the university said, "Move reveals the U.S. is a hegemonic and arrogant nature, stressing blacklisting a university is not a good sign." Statement also accused Washington of promoting terrorism and extremism in the world, noting the U.S. is in no position to carry out such moves against other nations. Recently, the U.S. Treasury Department imposed sanctions on Al-Mustafa International University over alleged ties with the close force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. And now a mega transport project has been launched in Iran's northeast, linking the country to Afghanistan. Here's more by Puman Abedi.
Iran and Afghanistan have launched a railway that connects the Iranian northeastern city of Khaf to Herat in the other country. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani and his Afghan counterpart Ashraf Ghani attended the inauguration ceremony through video conference due to the global corona epidemic. The two sides said the project is a pivotal one that helps boost bilateral economic ties and collaborations.
With the completion of such an important project, the commodities of your businessmen could easily be transferred to Europe. With this railway, you can have access to Iran's southern ports, including Imam Khomeini Port and Bandar Abbas, and later on to Chabahar.
For his part, the Afghan president also said that the important project will give fresh momentum to economic ties between the two countries.
We jointly put iron on earth and soil to tie the destiny of the two nations to outline our future collaborations. I offer congratulations and wish the best for the two nations and governments.
The railway is about 140 kilometers long, and after being connected to Herat, it will be about 225 kilometers.
The Khaf-Herat Railway will enhance economic, cultural, and social exchanges between the two countries. It will see over 6 million tons of goods transported annually. It will also link Afghanistan through Iran to the Caspian Sea, Russia, and Europe. Humana Abedi, Tehran.
Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The UK is to host vital UN climate talks called COP26 in Glasgow next November, postponed by a year by the pandemic, at which all nations will be expected to come forward with national plans on emissions. Known as Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs, these plans for carbon curbs by 2030 are the bedrock of the 2015 Paris Agreement. As host, the UK will be expected to show purported leadership on its NDC in the hope of pushing other countries towards the tougher targets needed. Under current NDCs submitted in 2015, greenhouse gas emissions globally would reach levels giving rise to 3 degrees centigrade of heating, far in excess of the Paris upper limit of 2 degrees Celsius, and likely to cause devastating extreme weather. Lord Stern of Brentford, who is an advisor to the government on COP26, said recently that the UK government should submit a 70% emissions cutting target for its NDC. However, the government's target is likely to fall slightly below that figure at 68% to 69%, though it will still represent a hastening of effort. Current plans under the UK's carbon budgets would imply a cut of about 61% by 2030. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Fiona Harvey, an environment correspondent, under the heading UK's 2030 carbon target set to disappoint green campaigners. This article has been appeared on the front page of TheGuardian.com. Please stay tuned for more. Green campaigners and climate experts are set for disappointment as the UK government prepares to publish its carbon target for 2030. Environmental and development groups have been pushing the Prime Minister to opt for a stretching target of cutting emissions by 75% by 2030 compared with 1990 levels, which would have put the UK at the forefront of developed countries in fighting the climate crisis. The UK is to host vital UN climate talks called COP26 in Glasgow next November, postponed by a year by the pandemic, at which all nations will be expected to come forward with national plans on emissions. Known as Nationally Determined Contributions, or NDCs, these plans for carbon curbs by 2030 are the bedrock of the 2015 Paris Agreement. As host, the UK will be expected to show purported leadership on its NDC in the hope of pushing other countries towards the tougher targets needed. Under current NDCs submitted in 2015, greenhouse gas emissions globally would reach levels giving rise to 3 degrees centigrade of heating, far in excess of the Paris upper limit of 2 degrees centigrade, and likely to cause devastating extreme weather. Lord Stern of Brentford, who is an advisor to the government on COP26, told The Guardian recently that the UK government should submit a 70% emissions cutting target for its NDC. Stern said the Prime Minister now understands that this is a growth story, not a burden, adding, but it does need strong investment and innovation. However, the government's target is likely to fall slightly below that figure, at 68% to 69%, though it will still represent a hastening of effort. Current plans under the UK's carbon budgets would imply a cut of about 61% by 2030. The increased effort is not likely to cost the UK more. The Committee on Climate Change, the government's statutory advisor, will report in coming days that the cost of reducing emissions have plunged in recent years. Green campaigners argue that the rapidly falling costs mean the government should go further and faster. Research by World Wildlife Fund, WWF, and the Imperial College found that a cut of 72% by 2030 was economically feasible. A group of climate and development charities wrote to the Prime Minister Boris Johnson recently calling for a 75% cut in emissions to show leadership at COP26. The signatories wrote, "Given the need for the UK to take on our fair share of global emissions reductions based on historic responsibility, we must move further and faster and commit to pursuing every opportunity to even exceed this target, as well as lead global efforts to close the gap to 1.5 degrees centigrade, the lower limit on global heating in the Paris Agreement." The government is likely to hail its new target as an improvement on current plans and a marked strengthening of the target that would have been expected if the UK was still part of the EU. Under the EU's plans, the UK's carbon cutting figure could have been as low as about 65%. The EU will continue to debate its NDC in near future, ahead of a climate ambition summit of world leaders to be hosted on December 12th by France and the UN to mark the 5th anniversary of the Paris Agreement. According to the Paris Agreement, all NDCs are supposed to be submitted by December 31st, but some countries are likely to miss the deadline. Projected winner of 2020 U.S. presidential election, Joe Biden, has made clear his so-called commitment to rejoining the Paris Agreement when he takes office next January, and drawing up a new NDC will be one of his early tasks. Biden also purportedly supports setting the U.S. on a path to net zero emissions by 2050. China set a new target of net zero emissions by 2060, and with the EU, the UK, Japan, and many other developed countries now also aiming for net zero by 2050, the stage is set for a so-called global effort on a mid-century goal of a net zero economy. Climate Action Tracker calculated recently that these long-term commitments, if fulfilled, would lead to a rise in global temperatures of 2.1 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, not far above the upper limit set in the Paris Agreement. However, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned recently that while long-term targets were a major step forward, they needed to be backed up by shorter-term policies and actions. The NDC are seen as a vital stepping stone towards fulfilling the long-term targets on emissions, because carbon cutting needs to start now to prevent the further buildup of carbon in the atmosphere. Guterres delivered his starkest warning yet on the climate, saying humanity was at war with its own planet. He said, humanity is waging war on nature. This is suicidal. Nature always strikes back, and it is already doing so with growing force and fury. Biodiversity is collapsing. 1 million species are at risk of extinction. Ecosystems are disappearing before our eye, adding, human activities are at the root of our descent toward chaos. But that means human action can help to solve it.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-'aliyyi al-'azim. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف وجعلنا من أعوانه وأنصاره. Last night we spoke about the way that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has provided humanity with guidance for their personal progress and also for establishing a community, a universal community based on justice as a major value and other values that inshallah we will talk about it. When it comes to personal progress, all the prophets helped humanity in order to combat their ego, in order to combat temptations coming from their nafs ammara, their commanding soul, from Satan. They tried to take them from darkness to light. But when it comes to establishing a just society, it was the job of the messengers of the Rusul who were given the book and Mizan, the scale or the balance, so that they would lead and guide humanity towards establishment of this social justice. لقد أرسلنا رسلنا بالبينات وأنزلنا معهم الكتاب والميزان ليقوم الناس بالقسط. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says he is the one who sent his messenger with guidance, بالهدى ودين الحق, the religion of truth. Why? Just because of having this on display. You know, sometimes you go to some shops, you know, to some supermarkets, they have many things on display. Some of the things are rarely purchased, but they have to keep it on display because they want to say, you know, we have everything, so that you don't need to go to any other place. Everything is here. So has Allah sent Islam or this religion of truth so that it is on display, but people go for other options? No. This is for display, But the hope is that people finally reach that level of understanding and maturity that they choose truth over falsehood. Therefore, they come to this religion of truth. لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ So that this religion of truth will overcome any other religion. When I say any other religion, quickly some people think we are talking about other monotheistic religions. We are talking about Islam defeating Christianity and Judaism. No, that's not the point. The point is religion of truth in contrast to religion of falsehood. In the first place, those who have no God. In the second place, those who have polytheistic understanding of God. And this is why he said, وَلَوْ كَرَهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ Not وَلَوْ كَرَهَ أَهْلُ الْكِتَابِ The concern is not أَهْلُ الْكِتَابِ, the concern is مُشْرِكُونَ
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true. And always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide. An example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here. Who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
As you know in our hadith about Akhir al-Zaman, we have two groups of hadith. One says that when Imam al-Zaman comes, Imam would rule and judge among the people of the book according to their own books. Among the Christians according to their own book. Among the Jews according to their own book. They would have their own places of worship. Imam would not close down or shut down, you know, churches and synagogues. Yes. Gradually, they themselves would come to the understanding that if they want to be better Christians and better Jews, they can find it with Imam Zaman. They can find it with Imam Zaman. So therefore, finally, as we have in some hadith, Islam will be available in all places. But this is not happening by force. This is not happening at once. This is a gradual process. And everything is for going back to Tawheed, to submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Of course, the best model, the best way of doing it is presented in the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ This ad-deen is deen batil, which is in contrast to deen al-haq. وَلَوْ كَرَهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ Even if those who are polytheists, they don't like, they cannot stop this. Or in Surah Fath, وَكَفَى بِاللَّهِ الشَّهِيدًا And Allah is sufficient as a witness. Allah is informing about this, and you don't need to ask any other witness for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. His news is sufficient. His news is something that you can 100% trust. So, this ideal, this goal of reaching that point, that the message of all the messengers, the book, that Al-Kitab, will be established, is guaranteed. When? We don't know. and no one can fix the fact. Our hadith says you must reject and deny anyone who fixes a time. If someone says this is going to happen next year or after 100 years, or you know, in the year 3000 or 4000, we have to reject. Why? Because it very much depends on us. If we fix a time, then either we relax and say this is going to happen after 1000 years, so we have no responsibility, or we think that we have to do things in rush. Someone says, you know, next year Imam Zaman is coming, so then we think that we have to do things in rush. No, you have to be always working, you have to be always alert, but at the same time, you don't know when. So we have to have plans for future as well. I have seen some people who had the wrong idea that Imam Zaman is going to come very soon. Therefore, they did things in rush. They didn't do proper planning for future, and they messed up the things. We have to be always looking into all the opportunities for working, but at the same time, we have to have long-term plans. You know, if I think Imam Zaman is coming next year, so we will finish all the resources within the year. So if Imam Zaman doesn't come next year, we are a community which is bankrupt. If I know that Imam Zaman is coming in 2 years, so I never go to find a good, for example, place to build a school or mosque because Imam is coming 2 years, so he will decide himself. So you have to find the balance between being always alert and working hard, but at the same time, not being in rush, being far-sighted and plan for future.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe as hard, and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
Oh Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. Oh Allah, please forgive us. Please forgive all our sins and mistakes and shortcomings. Please enable us to serve you with full honesty and truthfulness and sincerity. Please include us among the best followers of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad. Please protect and safeguard our community and our families and our youths from everything that you don't like. Oh Allah, please hasten the reappearance of Imam Zaman Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Please make our Imam Zaman happy with what we do and what we say. Please answer his du'as for his faraj. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. Please give shifa to people who are ill in their body and in their soul. Oh Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraji, those who have passed away, please let them be with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraji who are alive. Oh Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
My ummah, he will say, Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of his way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again. once again.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
In the limelight.
More than three-quarters of California's population are now living under the harshest lockdowns in the United States, as COVID-19 cases hit record levels in the country's most populous state. Regional stay-at-home restrictions went into effect for nearly 23 million residents in Southern California, and 4.4 million residents in a large swathe of the Central Valley on Sunday night, as ordered by the California Governor Gavin Newsom. The orders take effect on a region-by-region basis when hospital intensive care unit beds in the region drop to below 15%. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Vivian Ho and Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Millions of Californians Put on the Strict COVID Lockdown. Stay with us for more of Vivian Ho and Martin Pengelly's article. More than three-quarters of California's population are now living under the harshest lockdowns in the United States, as COVID-19 cases hit record levels in the country's most populous state. Regional stay-at-home restrictions went into effect for nearly 23 million residents in Southern California and 4.4 million residents in a large swathe of the Central Valley on Sunday night, as ordered by California Governor Gavin Newsom. The orders take effect on a region-by-region basis when hospital intensive care unit beds in the region drop to below 15%. The Southern California region and the San Joaquin Valley region joined five counties in the San Francisco Bay Area region, where local leaders preemptively ordered its 6 million residents to enter lockdown starting at 10 p.m. on Sunday, 6th of December. We cannot wait until after we have driven off the cliff to pull the emergency brake, said the Santa Clara County Health Officer, Dr. Sarah Cody. The restrictions, which require people to stay home and minimize contact with other households, will remain in place for at least 3 weeks, covering the Christmas holiday. All retail stores can stay open, although at 20% capacity, along with outside spaces such as parks and beaches, but restaurants and hair and nail salons and tattoo shops are required to close. California reported 24,735 positive cases in the last 24 hours, bringing the average to 21,924 cases of coronavirus infection a day. The state had a 10.5% 7-day positivity rate, meaning that in the past week, 1 in 10 Californians tested for coronavirus came back with positive results. California Governor Gavin Newsom noted that the rate of growth on the state's positivity rate was very, very acute. Just 30 days ago, the state's positivity rate was at 3.4%. Health officials believe the numbers will only get worse before they get better. We know that those cases that potentially occurred around people's dinner tables, activities, plans, travel through Thanksgiving are going to show up right about now. We're going to be seeing that for many days to come, said Dr. Mark Galli, California's Secretary of Health and Human Services. Dr. Mark Galli added, "We believe that the level of transmission that we've been reporting so far will likely continue to go up sometime because of those activities." Across the United States, 101,487 people were being treated in hospital with COVID-19 on Sunday, 6th of December, according to the COVID Tracking Project, and an additional 1,138 deaths were recorded. California has recorded more than 1.3 million cases, setting a new daily record on Sunday, with 30,075. Hospitalizations have topped 10,000 in a 72% increase over the past 14 days, with more than 2,300 patients in intensive care unit care. The 11-county Southern California region, which includes Los Angeles and San Diego, had only 10.9% of intensive care unit beds available, the state reported on Monday, 7th of December. The figure was at 6.3% for the San Joaquin Valley, a dozen counties in the Central Valley and rural areas of the Sierra Nevada. Together, the two regions are home to more than half of California's 40 million population. Surging cases and hospitalizations are not letting up, said Dr. Salvador Sandoval, the public health officer for the city of Merced. "I can't emphasize this enough. Everyone must take personal steps to protect themselves and to protect others." The surge in cases has overrun the hospital capacities of more rural regions of California in particular, such as San Benito County, which is included in the San Joaquin Valley region and is under lockdown. "Our only hospital in San Benito County is completely full," said Dr. David Ghilarducci, the San Benito County Public Health Officer. Dr. Ghilarducci added, "This is an alarming situation that could get much worse. We can only get through this if we work together. Please follow our advice to keep yourself, your family, and your neighbors safe." Other regions of California, the Greater Sacramento, Northern California, and San Francisco Bay Area, range between 20% to 28% in capacity. But health officials in five of the San Francisco Bay Area's 11 counties adopted the state stay-at-home order for San Francisco, Santa Clara, Marin, Alameda, and Contra Costa counties, as well as the city of Berkeley, which has its own public health department, saying they could not afford to wait. "Our biggest fear all along, that we won't have a bed for you or your mother or your grandmother or grandfather when they get sick, is the reality we'll be facing unless we slow the spread of the virus," said London Breed, San Francisco's mayor. The San Francisco Bay Area order will last at least through to 4th of January, a week longer than the state timeline. The new shutdowns were a gut-wrenching move for small businesses. Michelle Saunders-James was in tears on Friday at the thought of closing down her Oakland nail salon just 5 weeks after reopening. "We wear face shields, we take temperatures, we do everything we are told to do so everyone feels safe, including our staff and our team," she told KGO TV, so I don't understand why it's not enough, and I'm terribly sad and afraid. We know that these various restrictions are a hardship for people, Dr. Galli, California Secretary of Health and Human Services, said on Monday. It's not what we expected at this time of the year, but we know some of them are required to make sure we get through the surge as quickly as possible, and in saving as many lives as possible, and in preventing as many infections as we possibly can. Other states are also struggling. In Arizona, on Saturday, the top public health official reported a near record of nearly 6,800 new coronavirus infections, telling people to wear face masks around anyone outside their household, even those you know and trust. We must act as though anyone we are around may be infected, Dr. Kara Christ wrote on Twitter. On Sunday, 6th of December, Virginia reported a record number of cases for a second straight day with 3,880. Virginia has reported a total of 255,053 coronavirus cases with 4,200 deaths. Iowa saw an additional 35 deaths on Monday, 7th of December, continuing its high level of deaths during the pandemic. Despite the grim outlook, however, hope is on the horizon. A vaccine developed by Pfizer could be given emergency use approval this week. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced on Monday that California is preparing to receive more than 2 million doses of the vaccine in December. On Sunday, Dr. Monsef Slaoui, the chief scientific advisor to the federal Operation Warp Speed Vaccine Development Program, told CNN's State of the Union program that, in his opinion, the vaccine's effectiveness could last for many, many years, with older people and others more vulnerable requiring a booster every 3 to 5 years. Dr. Slaoui also said it was not known if vaccinated persons could spread the virus and said there may be an initial indication on that sometime in February or March. Dr. Slaoui added, the continuing unknowns made it important for people to remain cautious and take safeguards to protect themselves and others against COVID-19. Once 70% to 80% of the population was vaccinated, he said, the virus will go down. On NBC's Meet the Press program, the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator, Dr. Deborah Birx, said, the vaccine's critical, but it's not going to save us from this current surge. Only we can save us from this current surge.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.